Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week's an incredible episode with Collectible Cities coming on the podcast. They take movers and shakers from history and create absolutely pristine toys and packaging, and it's incredible. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can jump on the YouTube channel where we do unboxings and reviews at Toys on Tap as well. If you want to help us out, you can rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And if you even want more, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. We post nitty-gritty episodes. We post full video interviews. We post everything there. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Hey.
There we go.
Hey.
How you doing?
Genius.
Good. It's good to see you guys. Thank you so much for working with schedules and stuff. It's a busy week at work for me.
Oh yeah, so no, not at all. It's us. We've got our daughter had
she's full time at nursery, which equates to like half time. Yeah, but no, it's like, good to connect.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So.
Awesome. Welcome to Toys on Tap. If you haven't ever seen an episode or heard an episode, it's about toy artists all over the toy scene, from Sofubi and Resin and stuff. But you two do something way different than I've seen before, so I'm really excited to have you guys on today.
Yeah, great. I've been listening to you for a little while now. I've been loving hearing all different artists talk about their journey and stuff. Katie had to listen to the Super 7 one the other day, which was, again, just inspiring, and it was good to hear sort of where they started off and so on.
So, awesome. Yeah, it's really neat to like relate to different parts of people's stories.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that like hundreds and hundreds of people are out there creating toys, but rarely do they ever look alike. Like they all have these crazy ideas and they've got their own style, so it's intense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
really neat.
It's great.
But welcome. Before we do anything, please introduce yourselves and tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, we are Collectible Cities. We're a UK brand / Canadian. Okay, it's part Canadian. And we create little miniature sort of, how do you describe them?
PVC collectibles based on historical movers and shakers.
That's such a good tagline.
Pocket-sized city icons.
Yeah.
Nice. That's an incredible tagline. I have so much I want to talk about.
We're not professional copywriters.
We do this with every artist. If you're in toys, that means toys at some point had an impact on your life. So walk me back to when you guys were kids. What toys were you playing with? What toys did you have? Cartoons, all that stuff growing up.
I watched a lot of animation when I was a kid. My only toys, I had two older brothers. They were very much into the sort of WWF back in the day. Like they'd collect the figures, they had Ghostbusters, Turtles. They even had like the Ghostbuster thing where you kick and then it opened up to catch the ghost and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Which I think my mum still got up in the loft somewhere, which I have to dig out one day. But yeah, just lots of stuff like that, really. And then obviously from a British background, my like animation wise, like when I was kids, like Popes and Pat. And then I went on to sort of old up when I got older into like X-Men, Spider-Man, like this animated series. So that's what I was really into. And then from yourself living in Canada, what do you?
Yeah, I quite liked action figures as well when I was younger. My sister was really similar age to me, and so we are always sort of butting heads. So she was into horses, which meant I liked Ninja Turtles. So I remember us sort of always battling it out. And then things just like Polly Pocket. And then I remember also growing up, always around the house, we had like Tintin collectibles and sort of the really nostalgic kind of classic.
Lego, Playmobil.
Oh, lots of Lego and Playmobil.
It's crazy. Like you had, I'm assuming Playmobil was huge for you being in the UK.
Yeah.
And then being in Canada, is it big up there? I didn't see Playmobil until I got to be an adult. And then I finally saw what it was.
I had a younger sister who quite a bit younger. So I remember kind of right when she was growing up, it was becoming more of a thing, but it's really neat.
I think it's partly also because it's that sort of younger age where obviously the Lego, the kids could choke on it.
Yeah.
The Playmobil is a little bit bigger, but I remember the 7 is quite the big castle one, which I'm sure actually, because we're in Canada at the moment and I popped into
Cherry Bomb Toys. It's really
And they had the old castle there, which I had a kid, and that took me back, which was pretty sweet.
Awesome. And I'm assuming that there's some art in there because there's such an artistic touch to the toys that you guys create. So, I mean, we go through the same cycle. At some point, you get rid of all your toys and realize we're too old. So when did art start kicking into your guys' lives?
Art's always been there, really. Like, I'm dyslexic myself, and that's always been my outlet. Like, that's why I sort of been good at, and I felt like I could hopefully make a career out of it. So I started doing art class in school and so on, and then I went up doing, because I felt like everybody's saying starving artist, you won't make it and stuff, so I went more into design. So I did a bit of graphic design, and then I ended up realizing I love animation from being a kid and watching so much. I decided to study animation, but I did a quick course which was online with a thing called Animation Mentor, which is the guys from Pixar and DreamWorks, who sort of trained you. So you just logged online, and this was about 10 years ago now, which I learned that, which I ended up then got a first job at Ragdoll, which, do you know Teletubbies?
Yeah.
So I worked for them guys for like my first year, which weren't Teletubbies, but it's a spin-off thing called Abney and Adventures of Till, which was sort of just being around all them people and production-wise. But from that short contract, I felt when you work in an animation studio and so on, you're a bit of a small cog in the wheel. And I feel like you sort of you lose some of that,
putting your own spin on things and owning a project. And
yeah,
I think you've always had a deep desire to do your own thing.
Yeah,
So, and realize something that's been your own creative vision.
So from that, I ended up going to more like broadcast and worked for like a small independent company, which did a lot of like music branding, kids channels and movies. And with them sort of briefs, I got to do like different sort of designs. Like you got... there's always like short budgets and stuff, but like you could create anything, but you'd be a one-man band and have to design, animate and do the whole work. So that's where sort of that's my background. And then Katie come from Calgary, you studied design, didn't you?
Yeah, I as well didn't really picture myself in a more corporate job, but I wanted something a bit more serious than being a fine artist. I don't have to drive to be, you know, always doing my own thing. So I did a degree in visual communications, bit of illustration and some advertising. And I worked in Canada just for about a year, and then I decided to move to the UK. So I'd been there for about a year before we met. And I was working kind of in fashion graphics, branding, packaging, that sort of stuff, and doing a little bit of digital as well. But I've always really enjoyed doing print graphic design and branding. So kind of putting our skill sets together was where Collectible Cities really came from. And we just wanted to do something that we loved doing and that we would want to own.
Yeah, because we sort of when we both went sort of freelance in London and different places, we then started a sort of creative agency ourselves. And from over the years, like obviously we love working with clients and that, but you never really get your own vision. So this is gave, we was like, especially with COVID, a lot of my work dried up. And then Kate was quite busy, but you said.
Bankrolled us.
Before that, when we were both working in different places, we were thinking about creating a kids app, a London kids app of all the different signs. So we did lots of different designs, illustrations and so on.
Ideas for content. And it never really went anywhere. We got to the stage where we couldn't code it ourselves properly. We didn't want to dish out a lot of money and always be having to improve it. And also with an app, we couldn't really see a way to make that money back.
It was that period of time when like the App Store has that massive boom, but it was the end of it. So and then I was starting to change the sort of form. So it was like there's no way to actually make a living from this, really. And also, like, they keep updating it, so would have had to get someone to code it constantly, and it just
so would have been... clearly making toys was going to be a much better decision.
So so it came to like after lockdown, and I was like, okay, we've had all these designs, and we previously before that, we did quite a bit of traveling, and especially in like Asia. Mm-hmm. And we really got influenced by, say, we did a trip to Japan, and also we had a friend's wedding in Korea. And I don't know if you know Sticky Monster Labs.
Yeah.
So, like, just, and also, like,
we've seen them at talks before.
Talks, too. Yeah.
They were one of those companies that really inspired us, because it was sort of similar where they've got an agency, they're doing client work. Also, Superfiction, is that?
Superfiction, that's the Korean one.
Yeah, and so they do agency work and then these really sharp renders and physical toys. And we're like, that's perfect.
And the other one, when they all kicked off beginning, was Yum Yum Studio. Again, they did, the British guys, two of them, I believe, they created these cool little animations, which today, if you look at them, when it was done like 10 years ago, they just looked amazing. But then they also created physical products of their toys. So it was sort of this a cross between us with our design / interests. And also we thought, from going to all these different countries in, say, like Japan, they've got these great mascots, but the UK, they haven't really got anything.
Yeah.
And we've got all this history. And we was like, okay.
So many amazing stories. And then the gift shops are just so disappointing. So that was sort of the original. Because, everywhere we went in Japan and in Korea, we wanted to buy things from the shops and just, you know, display them at home and have them remind us of all these cool things we'd done and what you'd learned when you were abroad. So, we felt like London was missing a trick with that, which is kind of why we started with those characters. Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy. I have, like, you guys covered so much.
Sorry, yeah. If you need to slow down, especially with my accent, you're probably like...
No, it's good. It's good. To see your guys, both of you, your past, like, filling in into the toy world with your new take on animating some of your designs and with the design aspect from both of you making, like, such crisp designs. I love Teletubbies, so that's cool that you worked on that.
I worked on the company and stuff. So
So there's it's so cool to see. And like Japan, the gift shop thing, Japan has all like a mascot for everything. So it's funny that is something that kind of you brought back and were like, let's do this. At what point after did you just realize, you know, we have this art stuff? I know the app kind of came and went. When did you realize, let's try to make a toy. Let's try to make something that we can get out there.
Don't even really remember.
I think obviously I've always been interested in toys and I've worked on the animated series and you always see the merch side to it. And I was like, oh, it'd be lovely one day to do our own IP and then sort of just see how that went and so on. Sorry, what's the question again?
Did we decide to actually do figures? You've done a lot of research about it. Joe had worked on a different IP for like a YouTube series, and we were hoping to do product based on that, and it just wasn't being managed properly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we had a few of those sort of run-ins where we just thought, okay, we're going to take the reins. We're going to do our own thing. Yeah. And I didn't quite realize
we did sort of the research of like, I know it's gonna be crazy expensive where it is, but we was a bit like, you only live once.
Yeah. We had this vision where people will see them and they'll want them in the shop, obviously, so do injection molding, mass production off the ground. And then we realized, that's not at all how retail works, especially I think in the UK, things are very slow moving. You've got to contact someone, every month for a year before they'll get back to you. And we're seeing slow movement, but it's not at all what we pictured. So we kind of had to go about creating a brand and having a presence.
And especially like, obviously from coming from London, they have a lot of like design talks and different so on. Mm-hmm. From going to them talks, always feel like you learn so much from them. People are talking through their journey, and then also come from a motion background, a lot of people give up their sort of so the whole place can grow together. So that's why I don't know if you've seen some of our videos on our channel, it's us from like literally from the start to finish. And then also like trying to find sort of the manufacturers and so on. And then also it gives us a chance to sort of test what people are liking and so on.
Yeah. So tell me about that. I mean, starting a toy company from the ground up, insane. And yeah, so, yeah, so you are one, figuring out your designs, choosing certain characters or movers and shakers.
Yeah.
Then figuring out the aesthetic that you want, then packaging, then researching factories. And tell me about this process.
It's a big question, I know.
So much more work
than we anticipated, and different problems at every stage that you're like, this is it. It's going to destroy us.
Yeah.
We went into blind.
Yeah.
And we should have probably done more research. It was just like, we wanted to do it and we just did it, really. So we started off with designs between us. Yeah. We did quite a few designs before, actually. We had about 10 characters, but then we realized how crazy it was.
How expensive it is.
And we was like, we could do one, but then the factory obviously works better when you make more molds at the same time. So the cost came down.
And
so,
we also thought, because we're doing something quite different, as you said, it's good to have a proof of concept to say, here's a range, you know, then people get it a bit more than if you had one standalone figure.
Yeah. And the way we, obviously we didn't have no contacts. We had one which we talked to, which was in Canada, but then I think it's more of a middle name, man. And we just didn't have the money to literally have the middle person. So we literally just did the research on Alibaba. We managed the whole process. So we literally just went to, we contacted loads of different people, had a look at their sort of samples, and then we got prototypes made, and then we just sort of ran with it, really.
Once you see a prototype and you're actually like holding it, you just have to make them. It's so hard not to when you see how cool they look.
Yeah. And it's like your baby, like you've brought it into this world. And I've told so many people to use Alibaba because the amount of verified people and factories and stuff, it's insane. So I'm really happy that both of you like did that and went that route. That's awesome.
I think that the great thing about it is obviously you also get that straight away, you're chatting with the factory or the people working there and you're literally getting
conversation.
Yeah. Some of them are good, some of them, it's like anything. You're gonna have to search your right person to work with. And then you're never really gonna know until you're like further down the line. But we found it find them very, very professional, and they do an amazing job. There's obviously a few things you have to keep on top of as you go long down the line, but
And a few sort of cultural communication differences, but generally they're like so friendly and they feel like they have to do a good job and they want to do a good job, so they're quite receptive to feedback and act very quickly on it. So we use them for a lot of our other products as well, enamel pins, keychains, print now, so highly recommend.
It's crazy to use them for something like boxes because you can't feel the box, you don't get to see it until it's here. I used one company on there I designed this like flip thing, and I kept trying to ask them, can you show me it from the side, because I need to see thickness, because what they were talking about I wasn't understanding, and I couldn't tell them that I have no idea what millimeters are, and so it was like
back and forth.
Yeah, it was just chaotic. And so getting that first prototype and working with them, I mean, how are you communicating as far as like, we want the box to be this, but have nothing to show them?
Lucky enough, I just tend to model it up in 3D.
Okay.
So I use Cinema 4D, which is probably crazy for a lot of people who sculpt. I do a lot of box modeling and stuff. So I tend to design all my characters in there, and also then Katie
extensive spec sheets.
Yeah. We just do spec sheets, and also like we say, okay, we want this gloss, and that's where your expertise comes in, Katie.
Kind of, but it never quite works out exactly how you want it. But I think we're always kind of saying we're within that 90% to 95% range, and then it's close enough, it's good, you know, it'll do. Yeah. But then it's great when you can continue to work with the same supplier, because then you literally can say, We almost got it last time. What can we improve a bit this time? And like you said as well, we're just always asking for 1,000 photos and videos. And
yeah.
Can you take that outside, please? And they're like, okay, it's raining, but here you go.
Yeah. Especially yeah. Like the color stuff. Obviously, we get a test print sent back to us. But then that's never going to be the same color as the final.
No, I made a reel about that recently. Yeah. It's just impossible to know what you're going to end up with for the mass production.
And I think that's probably the craziest also thing. We've never actually gone there at all. We've done it literally all online, which is, again...
Hopefully one day. They probably don't want us to visit.
It's crazy. I think I did see that reel because... the reality, and so many artists that work with factories will say the same thing, matching colors is so hard because even in, I'm assuming you use Pantone codes and stuff.
We do, but we've been doing it by guesswork. Someone saw my reel and sent us Pantone books.
Yeah, which is
amazing.
Yeah.
Fortune they do. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, we're just us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so using that, I was told that even if they use the same color, their chemicals are different. And so getting to that color might be tough. And I've heard about artists taking plastic spoons and dipping them in the paint color and just sending that.
Oh, crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But it's just so insane because there's so many variations every step of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think even if you do like a second print as well, obviously they can match it, but it's never going to be the same.
So how did you become okay with the reality that it may never be exactly what you want?
Again, I think it's that it's never going to be 100% how you want it to be. There's always going to be that little niggle bit, but half the time it's just yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. We think like we're the ones that care so deeply. So if we get, you know, almost happy, then it's okay.
And then especially if you're coming at it from a render. Mm-hmm. We just had a photo shoot recently and we had like a macro shots and we're like, oh, okay, everything does show proper up and stuff.
But a lot of the charm too in these figures is the things that aren't perfect. Because then you would just have a render, but it's nice to have something that's got a bit of that sort of handmade feel to it.
Yeah.
With the beginning and the start, how did you settle on the first character that you wanted to create and which character is it?
Then we just winged it, didn't we?
I mean, our characters are numbered, so the first one is the queen.
Sorry, yeah. So obviously,
I guess if you're thinking London, it's like, that was before she died.
Obviously, we've got sort of a common design from our agency. We've got some kind of commercial in our back of our head. So we're like, hey, if we can do stuff which is going to be in certain places, and then we might have sort of a long legacy with that.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1.82 inch 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
So obviously we started with Queen Elizabeth I,
with her corgi. So that was a cute addition.
Yeah, yeah. And then what's the second edition?
Henry VIII. Yeah.
But again, he's out of like licensing and so on, which again we're sort of thinking of. We're thinking like historical palaces. So we're trying to keep him sort of a London sort of royal theme to a point.
Yeah.
The Beefeater for Tower London with his raven.
They're also quite cool figures. Like they're beefy. They're, you know, a lot of interesting shapes to them.
So and they've got so many stories as well. It's just thinking of places where people could go and take away a really cool toy with them. Well, we were hoping it was cool. And then obviously
Shakespeare is so international and has sold very well in Shakespeare's Globe, for instance, and in different theatre shops. So that one's done quite well for us.
And then Sherlock.
Sherlock Holmes is cool.
It's a late one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We were originally going to do the London Guard, but then...
My mom.
Yeah.
nah, Sherlock. And she was right.
Yeah.
We put it to the people and everyone voted for Sherlock. That, and his little, so we didn't even see a sample of him. He was a later addition.
Yeah.
We literally went to, yeah, I know, we're really careless. We've learned from our mistakes. But he worked out really well. And they, without telling us, his magnifying glass actually works on the toy. So
that
was a good choice.
So crazy to not get a sample. Holy moly. What's interesting, because the figures, they, I think the best way to say it is it makes history so approachable, because they, like, they're rounded, they're inviting, and it makes it, like, I'm not a fan of history. I don't love history, but I do love the toys that represent what it could be. And so it's cool to see that, and that you just started with some of the most iconic ones. And then I know that you've tried to do some licensing stuff. Can you guys tell me about the Beatles? I know that there was some videos made about it, and the design was flawless. So I'm really bummed about that. So tell me about the Beatles.
So we originally did I don't even know, Thunderbirds. Mm-hmm. So we basically got contact by them to do a license originally for them, and they knew the Beatles person. So we were like, That went just south, didn't it?
Everything went south.
Yeah.
God. We spent many months kind of doing pitch work and a lot of stuff that was not leading anywhere. But I mean, we were trying to pursue what we wanted to be the next step.
Yeah. So the Beatles was like, hey, I want to do sort of London, Liverpool. Like, you can't get any bigger than that. And was like, there's nothing really out there, which we really liked. Obviously, there's been some other Beatles toys, but
not good enough for that band.
Yeah.
And like, I think, you know, certain icons out there align well with what we're doing, where the design's sort of timeless. It's multi-generational, and that's kind of what we pictured the Beatles
being. So we thought, let's just give it a go and see what they say. So we obviously got it down to two in the end, designs. We was like, just send both of them, because we really, really loved them. We sent it to the person who deals with that, and they loved it. But then sadly, Apple Corp, I think it was just, we're too small, and they just rejected.
It was a quick no.
Yeah, it's a quick
no. And then we've tried again.
Yeah.
It was also a no. But maybe one day, or maybe it's just a generic band that's not named on the box.
It's sad though. We've had so many emails, and we know it do well, so well. It's just we don't want to take that risk of getting sued.
Yes. So. But we're just about to release our first licensing project. Yeah. So we did get somewhere in the end.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to talk about it, or is it?
Yeah. So
let's hear about it.
Yeah. So we're, do you know Frida Kahlo,
the artist?
So we're doing a Frida Kahlo
collection.
Incredible.
So we've done two figures, so they'll come sort of individually.
Oh, they're fantastic.
And then they'll also align to hold hands as well when you get the set. There we go.
So good. The colors pop so much.
Thanks. So yeah, it was quite fun working on that. And we've got sort of a box set for the two of them.
We've got the box set.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
And then you can buy them singly as well. And they've got two.
So yeah, we wanted to do something outside of London, and we wanted more females in the line. So really, she was a really good, you know, person to move on to next. And we would like to tackle more of pop culture. So
hopefully. It's like we've got our sort of style down, and we're open to do anything really. But again, we got to see how this one goes, because it's either going to bankrupt us or
We need investment for the next round.
So when you talk about style, you have this design aesthetic that I don't know how to explain. Like the box, it's very like minimalist, and it looks beautiful, and it has this matte like coating, and there's gloss and all kinds of stuff. And then the figure, the colors are just popping. So how do we, is it just like an all out war of deciding, like, we got to color this thing, what are we going to do? And you just put all the colors out on the floor. How does this work?
we've got a big old spec sheet again. So it's like kind of planning a range and kind of going, okay, what color box do we get to add next? And yeah.
You're really good at that. You're really good at that sort of side where you plan ahead.
Yeah.
Especially with the, like how the collections move, because obviously we want to make sure they all work together.
It makes life easier too then when we add new figures, because we have sort of a brand palette and we're just adding, you know, a bit as we go. So this with Frida, we got to add more of a purple and a green into the mix, and then we're already using that on some other figures as well. So everything sort of ties in and feels really cohesive. And partly that is planned because we do want to have more retail opportunities. So, you know, if something looks really good on the shelf as a collection, hopefully we'll have more foot in the door there.
Yeah.
And the way we also work, we always do the first editions, 1,000, because that's the minimum we can do.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And which again, it's like we made 5,000 toys originally up front, which is just, yeah.
So those ones we do with a hand-numbered collector's card. So every time we do new figures as well, we spend days and days writing the cards. Then second editions, we are not doing those cards in. And then they're in different colorways or something's new about them.
So we are sold out of the Queens, pretty much. We've got one left with the bundles.
Just a few with the bundles, yeah.
And then the Shakespeare, we've sold out as well. And we're on second editions for them. The other guys probably won't. Sherlock maybe,
yeah, but not Henry, probably.
No,
not we still have quite a few of them.
So again, it's just
when the box gets to your place that you live, what does 1,000 toys look like? And like, because do they come boxed all together in their own? What's 1,000 toys? How many boxes are we talking? Like, that's crazy.
A lot. It's like a whole room.
Yeah. We had them sent to Joe's mom's house.
Yeah, because we had no room in our local flat. Lucky enough, she had
we filled an entire room, floor to ceiling. And we were doing fulfillment ourselves originally, and it's just insane. Yeah, we couldn't quite comprehend how that would all play out. And now we've got bigger boxes, and we're, you know, double layering so we don't have damage, and we're trying to contend with the freight industry is awful. All the prices are just soaring, and it takes ages, and it's not been fun lately.
Yeah. Is the goal then, as this grows, because it looks like you're growing at such a fast rate, which... and so is the goal to eventually get to like a distribution hub that is just shipping out everything for you?
So we're doing that now at the moment, in a small like distribution a hub. So we send certain boxes at a time to them to store it, and then they start filling some of our
they do some of our retail like B2B orders as well. We're not like super busy, but I mean, when we were doing it ourselves, it was taking up half the day, and we just, we felt like if we were going to get help in any area, that was kind of the logical next step. But again, it does take a lot of managing as well.
And also, like, obviously month to month can be totally different. And that's where we do a lot of videos, because that helps us just get to new audiences and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's either some months we've hit our quota, sometimes we haven't, just to keep that sort of going. So we're very much on that sort of
knife edge.
Yeah. Because the design style is so unique, most of the artists on here go to some kind of convention or shows. Is this something that you both do, or is it where you're headed? What's that look like?
So we've done some London ones. So we did Designer Con. I did that last year.
Yeah.
Toy Con. That's what it's called over there. Which again, I was really surprised of. I was going there because obviously our stuff's quite a bit royalist and so on. And I was like, it's going to be the crowd. But everyone was lovely. The toy communities has been welcoming, and everyone's just their own thing, but everyone loves toys. So it's a great sort of thing. So we did that. And then also we did a London illustration, more design sort of wise.
Yeah, that was sort of our first one.
But we are doing DesignerCon this year
in Vegas. Yeah.
Nice. I will see you there, which I'm excited.
We still need to work out a few different bits, but I think we've committed, haven't we? So
yeah, we got the table. That's the most important part.
But again, it's the rest will figure itself out. I think with them, I was listening to your guy at last podcast, he was thinking about maybe doing it. But again, I can't see us breaking even, but I think just going for the experience and all these people we might meet, it's worth a try once.
Yeah, I think the hard part is it's all about mindset, right? You go there to make money and break even, you might, and it's awesome if you do, and I'm good luck.
Yeah.
But if you go there to grow and to see other artists and rub elbows with artists from all over,
you're going to
nail it immediately.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing, we want to make the most of it. And obviously, you've got the big dogs there and stuff, which is going to be cool to see.
It's so inspirational to see how other people go about events and set themselves up and what they've got on show. So it'll be really good.
There is. You're not missing anything. I'm hoping that there is a group that is going this year. They went last year. 1M Robots. If you go this year and they're there, you've got to see their booth. And when you, because booth setup is so tough, right? I think it's 10 by 10 you get.
Yeah, I think we got the smallest thing we can get.
We've got it's just a table.
Oh, okay. So like the 6 by something.
Yeah. Small.
So everyone sets up differently. I think it's tough because even 10 by 10, in order to bring all that stuff with you, you got to ship it or do whatever. But 1M Robots, they gutted their whole space and turned it into a whole nother like venue almost. And I keep sending people to them because the majority of their time up until DesignerCon last year was just set design.
Oh, wow.
And so it was cool to see. So I'm excited to see what you guys do with I don't know what to do with a 6 foot table. That seems so crazy for what you do.
Yeah, we'll
see. We had a booth previously at an event and we went way too over the top. We were installing cabinets and we're like, we're brand new. No one knows us. Why have we done this? And go really simple.
We tried to do like a floating cabinet on like a little wall and the thing.
You had to follow the spec sheet.
How are we doing this?
So with all of this, what's next for both of you, and what's next for as a company and growing as conventions, what's next in general?
I think just see how this year goes, really. Like, obviously we want to make Frida a thing. Hopefully we get into more places and so on. We just have to see where this goes.
This is kind of another attempt at something a bit new. It's a new location, slightly new audience probably. So we just hope that we can turn that one into a success, and that will allow us to be able to keep going and be able to make more figures. Yeah. We've got so many ideas of our own, and we really love on socials. So many people are giving us other great ideas or feedback or nixing our ideas. So it's been really fun to see what other people are looking for.
We have been in contact by a few people, which some opportunities might arise. But again, we can't really take too much because it might go ahead, might not.
Every time we get excited about something, it doesn't materialize.
Yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get, you know, a bit more investment.
As you can see, we've just been really reckless. So
I like the term reckless because those are the ones that succeed, right? Like
we can hope.
Fresh and burn.
Yeah, you took the risk and you're doing it and doing it from what it looks like well, and seeing that when you look over the course of all the ideas, do you have, because you've numbered them, do you have like the next 20 numbers, like this is what we're going to do?
No, not at all.
There's some we would really love to do, but we just can't picture them being quite commercially viable enough. So, we'd love to do some resin ones, some more, you know, experiment a bit more. We may try that.
At some point, I would love to get a... Again, I feel like I'm doing this the backwards way. I'd love to get a little resin machine and try and do some bigger figures, like just a few, like limit, like one or two bigger guys. But it's getting it. We just need to make sure we can keep this going. But yeah, it's just winging it, aren't we? Really.
Yeah, I think like kind of with our concept, it was limitless. So, yeah. I mean, we'd love to just keep going with it. I'd love to do sort of Greek mythology. The sort of literary figures have done quite well. People are really into that, all different ages of people. And artists would be really neat. Film directors, we'd love to do.
Obviously it would be cool to do some of the franchise stuff, like if the opportunity, but it's just, again, it's like we'd have to get some kind of investment, because I know the upfront cost is insane for like, the licensing. But like a lot of people ask for Doctor Who. I'm not a massive, but if people want it,
It would look cool in our style. Yeah. So yeah.
Or like Star Wars, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, Star Wars. I love to do Star Wars. Yeah. But again, if we're going to do it, obviously it's got to be our style. But then I'd have to put it to the people, because it's so, I don't know. I want to make sure we do it justice.
Yeah.
It's a
big brief.
It's a big brief.
That's, I think that so much, I mean, it's crazy because, I mean, with the Beatles, you know that, like, it's like licensing, likeness of people and stuff. But with some of your other designs, do you have to license them, or is it like public domain for people? What does that look like for that aspect of it? Can someone be in the public domain?
We hope.
Yeah.
Lawyers can say it's not blurry lines, say what they can say. It's like certain things.
Every country has different rules.
Things. I know in the States that you're quite hard on stuff, but then I think, okay, it's a little bit, if the person's died, but then you've got to worry about the net. I don't know. Yeah, we have to talk to an IP person properly.
With our first collection, we were careful just not to use particular crests, and, you know, everything was kind of derived shapes and designs, so it wasn't as direct.
Yeah, so like say the Beefeater, we obviously made sure it wasn't the royal chest crest, because you'd get done for that. We'd done our own sort of like parts to it, so we sort of just on the sort of cusp, I guess, or certain things, but yeah
that is so crazy. I've never thought about the reality that someone like, even after, like Shakespeare, who owns him? That's such
I think it's like anything, like if he is like years and years and years old, then that's game.
And I think it's the same with like Sherlock.
Yeah, it seemed like the Mickey Mouse, the Mickey Mouse one, the steam engine one, that's just came out of license, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I know they always keep trying to redoing the laws and stuff. But I believe that one, you can actually make something. But as long as he hasn't got the gloves, it's got to be the original or something.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't know if you guys, I can't remember the name of the movie. The second that Winnie the Pooh, I mean, it's been out of. For a long time. And they made a horror movie of...
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but I've seen that trailer. It's crazy.
It's like we took the public domain thing and went the wrong way.
Yeah, a little bit.
Get it back in the license.
Yeah, like that's the one I want to take back immediately.
Yeah. I saw that. Actually, there's a really cool... Someone done a really cool Winnie the Pooh recently, and it, like, it's got his shirt up top, and it's got the tattoos.
Oh, tattoos.
Oh, yeah, I have one on my shelf.
Yes,
yeah,
so
that's really cool.
Gisaya, he's a tattoo artist out of Spain. He's come on the podcast, and this is it's an insanely heavy figure, and the balance is weird, but it's great.
What resin is it?
Yeah, I think so. And it doesn't, I mean, no articulation or anything, but yeah, I mean, you both would know way more than me. I don't know how they get the detail on it.
Our detail's done with water stickers, usually.
Well, little guys are. They're probably hand painted.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's a crazy figure that he created. And there's another one. Luke Chu just produced one of his bears as Winnie the Pooh. It's called Low Fidelity. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll check it out. I love Winnie.
It has been such a pleasure having both of you on. I absolutely love bringing new people with new design ideas and aesthetics on the podcast. We have two more things for you. The last part is just get to plug anything you want, where people can go and get to you and all that stuff. And then the part after that goes on the Patreon. It's called the Nitty Gritty, and every artist gets their own specific question. And you have video that I really want to talk about. For the last part, please plug everything that you've got going on, where they can go to talk to you, all that kind of stuff.
Cool. So we've got our website, collectiblecities.com. And then we're on social. So we're Instagram, Collectible Cities. Just we're always...
Collectible is with an A because we are partly British.
And then also we're on TikTok. So again, and then also YouTube. YouTube, we have some more longer forms, and we've done, again, sort of more the shorter videos where people can actually see our process and also how to, if they want to ever start themselves, which I don't know what I was doing. If you want to bankrupt, just...
And Frida Kahlo.
Frida Kahlo. So we're doing a pre-order, which we're coming out in a few days. So I don't know when the podcast comes out, but it's probably out. And then we should have all the toys in September.
Yeah, we'll do a bigger launch in September.
Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, this comes out Monday, so we're excited.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. Great, perfect.
Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap and talking all things Collectible Cities.
Thank you. It was so good to meet you, and we'll see you in Vegas.